Jaya Rana Madhava Jaya Kunjabi Ahuri Jaya Rana Madhava Jaya Kunjabi Ahuri Bichana Palamba Jaya Giri
Sami Maharshila Prabhupada ki jai. ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Goti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Gadadha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Shri Radhakrishna. Gopi Gopinath, Shaima Kunda Radhakunda, Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturidam Kijai, Jagadatha Sami Kajai, Yamunamai Kajai, Shimadi Lassi Devi Kajai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kajai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gol. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Gaur Premananda. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharini Nirashesha Shunya Bhadi Paschacha Deja Tarani Somagana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shlakya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gure Namaha. So I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So good to see everybody. So we're going to continue with our reading of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita tonight. So, of course, first I will make an announcement. Let me read this announcement. It's not about me, but it's about something really nice. Many of you know a new president was inaugurated, not in the temple. A new president was inaugurated in America. And tomorrow, let me read the announcement. This year's service, which comes the day after the inauguration, recognizing the inauguration of the new president, always includes a variety of religious leaders, and for the first time, it will include a representative of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness saying a few prayers. So this is Anutama Das, ISKCON's Minister of Communications, will join with the Christians, Jews, Sikhs, Muslims, Native Americans, and representatives of other faiths in a one-hour presidential inaugural prayer service that includes prayers, readings, hymns, and blessings. Of course, he's not going to speak for an hour. He'll be part of the whole ceremony. So that's very auspicious that ISKCON is being recognized as the representative of the, I guess, Hindu tradition, or whatever that means. And I think things will get better here. And I think your old friend Karoni, that's what I'm talking about, will be leaving us soon. Karoni. Okay. On that happy note, we'll go to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya 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 Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Jaya Nityananda. Okay. We're going to the seventh chapter of the Adi Leela of that we will share the screen. Where is that seventh chapter? There, somewhere. I'll show all windows. I got a lot of windows open. Oh, that's why. Tons of windows open. Okay, here we go. Text 49. We will start. It says, please move this window away from whatever we want. The window's not interfering with anything. Text 49. It Timadye Chandrasekara Mishutapana Tuki Hanya Prabhupaya Kala Nivedana. Well, Lord Chaitanya, this is, okay, let me fill you in where we are. We're in Benares right now, at least in this narration. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is staying in the house of Chandrasekara, taking prasadam from Tapit Mishra, who was a Brahmin. And there are a lot of Mayavadis there, headed up by Prakashananda Saraswati. Mayavadis are those who say that the Lord's body is Maya, the Lord's activities are Maya. You're Maya, I'm Maya, we're all Maya. So well, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was instructing Sanatana Goswami, he's also doing that there. Both Chandrasekhar and Tapan Mishra became very unhappy. Therefore, they submitted an appeal to the lotus feet of the Lord. Katekas Shiniba Prabhu Tomara Nindana. Napani Sahite Eva Chai Diva Jivana. How long can we tolerate the blasphemy of your critics against your conduct? We should give up rather than hear such blasphemy. And Srila Prabhupada says, one of the most important instructions by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu regarding regular Vaishnava behavior is that a Vaishnava should be tolerant like a tree and submissive like grass. Trinadapi suni chena totohiva sayushna manina manadena kirtaniya sadhavi. That, of course, is from the Shikshashtaka. It's also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the 17th chapter, text 31. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Nevertheless, the author of these instructions, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, did not tolerate the misbehavior of Jagai and Madai. When they harmed Lord Nityananda Prabhu, he immediately became angry and wanted to kill them. And it was only by the mercy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu that they were saved. One should be very meek and humble in his personal transactions, and if insulted, a Vaishnava should be tolerant and not angry. But if there is blasphemy against one's guru or another Vaishnava, one should be as angry as fire. This was exhibited by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One should not tolerate blasphemy against the Vaishnava, but should immediately take one of the three actions. One, someone blasphemes a Vaishnava, one should stop him with arguments and higher reason. If one is not expert enough to do this, he should give up his life on the spot, and if he cannot do this, he must go away. The only feasible alternatives are to defeat the person philosophically, verbally, not physically, or head for the hills, run away. While Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Benares or Kashi, the Mayavadi sannyasis blasphemed him in many ways because although he was a sannyasi, he was indulging in chanting and dancing. Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhara heard this criticism, and it was intolerable for them because they were great devotees of Lord Chaitanya. They could not stop it, however, appealed to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because this blasphemy was so intolerable that they had decided to give up their lives. Why someone feels like that? Okay, you may think, well, that's really radical. Giving up their lives. Well, if you actually love someone, then if that person is criticized or hurt or threatened in any way, you will take remedial steps or you will feel like your life is finished. It's true. When there's a strong personal, emotional connection like that. For example, if I walk a little baby and say to the parent, your child is as ugly as a pig, then the parent will probably get extremely angry with me, and that's appropriate. Now, sometimes people would criticize Srila Prabhupada when he would get angry at people for criticizing Krishna or considering that Krishna's body and person were material. But that anger is appropriate because it's out of love. And they would say, oh, Prabhupada, you are not peaceful. Well, you're not supposed to be peaceful when there's love. When there's love, you have to defend someone. If someone is attacked verbally, corporally, that corporally means physically, then you should defend the person. Why not? It's painful to hear criticism of someone you love. What are we, dull stones or something? Tamare nindye yata sanyasira gana. Shunate na pari pate uriya travana. The Mayavadi sannyasis are all criticizing your holiness. We cannot tolerate hearing such criticism. For this blasphemy breaks our hearts. So Prabhupada explains that this is a manifestation of real love for Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are three categories of Vaishnavas: Kanishtadhikari, Majjhimadhikari, and Uttamadhikari. The Kanishta Adhikari, or the devotee in the lowest stage of Vaishnava life, has firm conclusions of the Shastras, and their firm faith is not that firm because they can be talked out of it pretty easily. The devotee in the second stage, Majjhimadhikari, is completely aware of the Shastra conclusion and has firm faith in his Guru and the Lord. He therefore, avoiding non-devotees, preaches to the innocent. However, the Mahabhagavata or Uttamadhikari, at this stage of devotional life, does not see anyone as being against the Vaishnava principles, for he regards everyone as a Vaishnava but himself. This is the essence of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction that one be more tolerant than a tree and think oneself lower than the straw in the street. Should not it be soon ni chena tarariva sahishnuna. However, even if a devotee is in the Uttama Bhagavat status, he must come down to the second status of life, Majjhimadhikari, to be a preacher. For a preacher should not tolerate blasphemy against another Vaishnava. Although a Kanishtadhikari also cannot tolerate such blasphemy, he is not competent to stop it by citing Shastric evidences. Therefore, Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar are understood to be Kanishta Adhikaris because they could not refute the arguments of the sannyasis and Benares. They appealed to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to take action, for they felt that they could not tolerate such criticism, although they also could not stop it. There's also another reason why, and that reason was that the society then was highly structured. In other words, there was a hierarchy. And especially the sannyasis, what are they? Gurus in ashrams. And the brahmanas were considered the gurus of all the varnas. Whoops, internet connection unstable again. Let's let it get stable. Okay. So the sannyasis being the gurus of all the varnas and ashrams, it wouldn't be appropriate for grahasthas to approach them and say, you are wrong, Maharaji. You are a brahmana. It wouldn't have been appropriate because there was a hierarchical structure to society. So it took Lord Chaitanya as a sannyasi to approach them. Lord Chaitanya would not have been able to deal with him, that is, etiquette-wise, if he wanted the etiquette. But because he was a sannyasi, he was able to deal with them. So that's another reason. Not only did they not have the knowledge to defeat these Mayavadis, that is, Chandrasekhar and Tapan Mishra, but they were in the wrong ashram. And mentioned that Chandrasekhar was considered a Shudra by caste. Ihashuni rahe prabhu. Ishat Hasiya Se Kalieka Vibra Milila Ashish. All right. While Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar were thus talking with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he only smiled slightly and was silent. At that time, a Brahmin came there to meet the Lord. This is serendipity arranged by the Lord. And if you don't know what serendipity is, look it up. and not the dictionary. Because the blasphemy was cast against Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he did not feel sorry, and therefore he was smiling. This is an ideal Vaishnava behavior. One should not become angry upon hearing criticism of himself. But if other Vaishnavas are criticized, one must be prepared to act as previously suggested. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very compassionate for his pure devotees, Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhara. Therefore, by his grace, this Brahman immediately came to him. By his omnipotency, the Lord created this situation for the happiness of his devotees. Asi nivedana kare charane dariha ikavastu magondeha prasana ahiha. The Brahmana immediately fell at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and requested him to accept his proposal in a joyful mood. Purport. The Vedic injunctions state, Tadvidi, Pranipatena, Pariprashnena, Sevaya. One must approach a superior authority in humbleness. That's from the Bhagavad Gita in the fourth chapter, text 34. One cannot challenge a superior authority, but with great submission, one can submit his proposal for acceptance by the spiritual master or spiritual authorities. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an ideal teacher by his personal behavior, and so also are his disciples. Thus, this Brahmana, being purified in association with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, followed these principles in submitting his request to the higher authority. He fell down at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and then spoke as follows. Sakala sannyasi muni kainu nirmantrana tumi adi afsa purna haya mora mana. Whoops, someone's sending a message. Let's see, I don't look at message. Internet is choppy. Is it still choppy? Anyone else to answer except for, can someone send a message? No, okay. It'll get choppy sometimes and then go away because of the internet here. Whoops, more text. No, okay. Okay, so try to tolerate. If it gets intolerable, just let me know. Because then I have to go on my alternative internet. Whoops, another message. All good. Okay. Reminds me of someone calling someone else on the mobile phone. Can you hear me? Yes, can you hear me? I mean, the typical conversation on a mobile phone. Can you hear me? Yes, I can hear you. So, my dear Lord, I invited all the sannyasis of Benares to my home. My desires will be fulfilled if you also accept my invitation. This Brahmana knew that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the only Vaishnava sannyasi in Benares. These were Mayavadis. It is the duty of a grahastha to sometimes invite sannyasis to take his home. This grahastha Brahmana wanted to invite all the sannyasis to his house. Must have had a big house. But he also knew that it would be very difficult to induce Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to accept such an invitation because the Mayavadi sannyasis would be present. Therefore, he fell down at his feet and fervently appealed to the Lord to be compassionate and grant his request. He humbly submitted his desire. Na yaha sannyasi goshti ihami jani mori anugraha kara nimantrana mani. My dear Lord, I know that you never mix with the other sannyasis, but please be merciful unto me and accept my invitation. An acharya, or great person at school, is very strict in his principles. But although he is as hard as a thunderbolt, sometimes he is as soft as a rose. Thus, actually, he is independent. He follows all the rules and regulations strictly, but sometimes he slackens this policy. It was known that Lord Chaitanya never Mayavadi sannyasis, yet he conceded to the request of the Brahmana, as stated in the next verse. Prabhu hasi nimantrana, ila angiya kara, sannyasira kripa lagi e vangi tanhara. Lord Chaitanya smiled and accepted the invitation of the Brahmana. He made this gesture to show his mercy to the Mayavadi sannyasis. Tapan Mishan Chandrasekhara owed his fee to the Lord regarding their grief at the criticism of him by the sannyasis and benaris. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu merely smiled, yet he wanted to fulfill the desires of his devotees, and the opportunity came when the Brahmana came to request him to accept his invitation to be present in the midst of the other sannyasis. This coincidence was made possible by the omnipotency of the Lord. Se vipra janena prabhu vayana karakare tanhara preranaya tanre atyagraha kare. The Brahmana knew that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never went to anyone else's house, yet due to inspiration from the Lord, he earnestly requested him to accept this invitation. Aradine kila prabhu sevi prabhavane te kilena vaisiyachena sanyasira gane. The next day, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to the house of the Brahmin, he saw all the sannyasis of Benares sitting there. Sabha namaskare kela para pakshalane para pakshalana kari vasila seistane. As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the sannyasis, he immediately offered obeisances and then went to wash his feet. After washing his feet, he sat down by the place where he had done so. By offering his obeisances to the sannyasis, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very clearly exhibited his humbleness to everyone. Vaishnavas must not be disrespectful to anyone, to say nothing of a sannyasi. In other words, they follow ordinary etiquette. Even though they're Vaishnavas, whatever country they're in, whatever etiquette there is, as long as they don't have to break the regulated principles, they follow that etiquette. That's really important. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches, amanina amana dena. One should always be respectful to others. In other words, offering respects to all others, but should not demand respect for himself. A sannyasi should always walk barefoot. And therefore, when he enters a temple or a society of devotees, he should first wash his feet and then sit down in a proper place. So, you may say, well, Maharaj, you are not walking barefoot. Prabhupada did not walk barefoot. This is traditional. See, when this description is there, we read the description, we should understand this is historically or contextually based. Someone can take this out of context and say, sannyasis, I'm taking your shoes away from you and your socks away from you. Imagine if I have to walk to the temple where it's freezing out in the morning without shoes and socks. Actually, the only people who walk around without shoes and socks in the winter here are hippies. Or people have been smoking so much they don't feel the cold. Anyway, so you should dress warmly. So this is a particular situation where there's a certain etiquette, and Lord Chaitanya is following that etiquette. It's descriptive rather than prescriptive. A perfect example of that. What do I mean by that? It describes the situation, describes the etiquette, but it doesn't prescribe it. Even though Prabhupada said a sannyasi, it's not really prescriptive for us. It's prescriptive for a particular time, place, and circumstance. Interesting, when dealing with a lot of Prabhupada's statements, internet connection unstable again, let it become. With a lot of Prabhupada's, let me turn on my alternative internet in case we need to go there. Hold on one second. Take a while to boot up. So a lot of Prabhupada's statements are actually contextual or time-bound or place-bound. You know, when, like Prabhupada makes a statement, I mean, for example, Prabhupada makes a statement about Suniti giving the Dhruvaraj instruction to go look for God in the forest. And Prabhupada said that Suniti could not become his guru because she was a woman and his mother. Okay, so that is contextual. Particular situation, Suniti could not become his guru. That was the culture, whatever, that situation. So situations change, culture changes. These are not eternal factors. These are details. I know I didn't mispronounce it wrong. That's a double negative. A sannyasi should always work barefoot. So, of course, and there's another thing here in the context of the sentence. And therefore, when he enters the temple for a society of devotees, he should first wash his feet. Anyway, in India, it is still the prevalent custom that one put his shoes in a specified place, then enter the temple barefoot after washing his feet. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an ideal acharya, and those who follow in his footsteps should practice the methods of devotional life that he teaches us. Let's go ahead. Text 60. Vasya karila kichu aishvarya pakasha mahatte jo maya vapu koti surya vasa. After sitting on the ground, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited his mystic power by manifesting an effulgence as brilliant as the illumination of millions of suns. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, is full of all potencies. Therefore, it is not remarkable for him to manifest the illumination of millions of suns. Lord Sri Krishna is known as Yogeshwara, the master of all mystic powers. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is Lord Krishna himself. Therefore, he can exhibit any mystic power. Prabhave akarshila sabha sanyas. Utila sanyasi sabha chariya asana. When the sannyasis saw the brilliant illumination of the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their minds were attracted, and they all immediately gave up their sitting places and stood in respect. Purport. To draw the attention of common men, sometimes saintly persons, acharyas, and teachers exhibit extraordinary opulences. This is necessary to attract the attention of fools. But a saintly person should not misuse such power for personal sense gratification like false saints who declare themselves to be God. Even a magician can exhibit extraordinary feats that are not understandable to common men, but this does not mean that the magician is God. It is a most sinful activity to attract attention by exhibiting mystic powers and then to utilize this opportunity to declare oneself to be God. A real saintly person never declares himself to be God, but always places himself in the position of a servant of God. For a servant of God, there is no need to exhibit mystic powers, and he does not like to do so. But on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a humble servant of God performs his activities in such a wonderful way that no common man can dare try to act like him. Never takes credit for such actions because he knows very well that when wonderful things are done on his behalf by the grace of the Supreme Lord, all credit goes to the master and not to the servant. Very important. Pakashananda name parva sanyasi pradana prabhuke kahila kichu karya samana. The leader of all of my... Oh, internet connection unstable again. Let me switch. Krishna's giving me indication. Give me one second. It'll take a second to switch. Hopefully it won't knock me offline. One and two. Time to switch when the internet starts acting up. Okay, it'll take a sec. Second. Connected. Okay. I think we're connected. Yeah. We're connected now to better internet. Oops. Okay. The leader of the Mayavadi sannyasis present was named Prakashananda Sarasati. And after standing up, he addressed Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as follows with great respect. Purport. As Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed respect to all the Mayavadi sannyasis, similarly, the leader of the Mayavadi sannyasis, Prakashananda, also showed his respects to the Lord. Now, what these Mayavadi sannyasis were thinking, because Mayavadi sannyasis are thinking, at least once you realize that you're Brahman and you're God or whatever, then that's self-realization. So they thought, oh, this sannyasi has realized he's God. Therefore, they address each other as Namo Narayana, offer obeisances to Narayan. We do not address each other like that. We address each other as namaste, offer respects to you. But actually, you are not Narayan. You are a servant of Narayan. So, Ihan Aisha. Shunaha Shripada. Apavitrastane Vaisa. Kiva Ava Sada. Please come here, Your Holiness. Why do you sit in that unclean place? What has caused your lamentation? So here is the distinction between Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Shananda Sarasati. In the material world, everyone wants to introduce himself as very important and great, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced himself very humbly and meekly. The Mayavadis were sitting in an exalted position, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat in a place that was not even clean. Therefore, the Mayavadi sannyasis thought that he must have been aggrieved, for some reason depressed, and Prakashananda Sarasati inquired about the cause for his lamentation. Prabhu kahi amihai hina sampradaya tomas vada sabhaya vasite ayu yaya. The Lord replied, I belong to the lower order of sannyasis. Therefore, I do not deserve to sit with you. And Prabhupada comments, the Mayavadi sannyasis are always very puffed up because of their knowledge of Sanskrit and because they belong to the Shankara Sampradaya. They are always under the impression that unless one is a Brahmana and a very good Sanskrit scholar, especially in grammar, one cannot accept the renounced order of life or become a preacher. Mayavadi sannyasis always misinterpret all the shastras with their word jugglery and grammatical compositions, yet Sripad Shankaracharya himself condemned such jugglery of words in this verse. Prapti sanite kale na hi rakshati dukrin karane. Dukrin refers to suffixes and prefixes in Sanskrit grammar. Shankaracharya warned his disciples that if they concerned themselves only with the principles of grammar, not worshipping Govinda, they were fools who would never be saved. Yet in spite of Sripad Shankaracharya's instructions, foolish Mayavadi sannyasis are always busy juggling words on the basis of strict Sanskrit grammar. Mayavadi sannyasis are very puffed up if they hold elevated sannyas titles like Tirtha, Ashrama, or Sarasati. Even among Mayavadis, those who belong to other sampradayas and hold other titles such as Vana, Bharati are considered to be lower grade sannyasis. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas from the Bharati Sampradaya, and thus he considered himself a lower sannyasi than Prakashananda Sarasati. To remain distinct from Vaishnava sannyasis, the sannyasis of the Mayavadi Sampradaya always think themselves to be situated in a very much elevated spiritual order. But Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in order to teach them how to become humble and meek, accepted himself as belonging to a lower sampradaya of sannyasis. Sampradaya means disciplic succession. Thus he wanted to point out clearly that a sannyasi is one who is advanced in spiritual knowledge. One who is advanced in spiritual knowledge should be accepted as occupying a better position than those who lack such knowledge. The Mayavadi Sampradaya sannyasis are generally known as Vedantis, as if Vedanta were their monopoly. Actually, however, Vedanti refers to a person who perfectly knows Krishna, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, text 15, Vedais cha sava sarar aham eva vedyaha. By all the Vedas, it is Krishna who is to be known. The so-called Mayavadi Vedantis do not know who Krishna is. Therefore, their title of Vedanti, or knower of Vedanta philosophy, is simply a pretension. Mayavadi sannyasis always think of themselves as real sannyasis and consider sannyasis of the Vaishnava order to be brahmacharis. A brahmachari is supposed to engage in the service of a sannyasi and accept him as his guru. Mayavadi sannyasis therefore declare themselves to be not only gurus, but jagat guru. Jagat means the whole universe, basically. Or the spiritual masters of the entire world, although, of course, they cannot see the entire world. Sometimes they dress gorgeously and travel on the backs of elephants and processions, and thus they are always puffed up, accepting themselves as jagat gurus. Srila Rupa Goswami, however, has explained that jagat guru properly refers to one who is the controller of his tongue, mind, words, belly, genitals, and anger. Priti vim, sashishat, such a jagat guru is completely fit to make disciples all over the world. Due to false prestige, Mayavadi sannyasis, who do not have these qualifications, sometimes harass and blaspheme a Vaishnava sannyasi, who humbly engages in the service of the Lord. Apane prakashananda hatete dharia, vasaila sabamadye samana kariya. Prakashananda Sarasati, however, caught Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally by the hand and seated him with great respect in the midst of the assembly. The respectful behavior of Prakashananda Sarasati toward Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very much to be appreciated. Such behavior is calculated to be agyata sukriti, or pious activities that one executes unknowingly. Thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very tactfully gave Prakashananda Sarasati an opportunity to advance in agyata sukriti so that in the future he might actually become a Vaishnava sannyasi. So this agyata sukriti is a very important point. That means, as far as devotional service is concerned, sukriti means meritorious or good activities. Agyata means not to know about them. So in this particular case, we're talking about transcendental activities. Of course, there's material activities that are also agyata sukriti, but we're interested in transcendental activities that are agyata sukriti. And what does that mean exactly as far as we are concerned? Let us say, if we are going out and distributing books and someone gives a donation, that's agyata sukriti. They're engaged in Krishna consciousness without them being aware exactly what they're doing. Someone opens a door for a devotee. One buys something for a devotee. One's parents get something for one if the parents aren't devotees. That's agyata sukriti. And the typical example of agyata sukriti, perhaps the most famous example, is that of Ajamil. Ajamil was getting ready to leave his body. He had become very degraded by bad association, at least with his mind. And he had named his oldest son, or youngest son, sorry, and Narayan. And so he was chanting the name of God, Narayan, 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 Narayan. as he was getting ready to leave his body, and as he was leaving his body, and he was protected from the Yamadutinis. He was protected from the Yamadutas because of his chanting the Lord's name, even though he was calling out for his son. So this type of chanting is known as Namabash chanting. Namabash chanting means you're chanting accidentally, your chanting means something else, you're chanting jokingly, you're chanting derisively, like you say, oh, those Hare Krishnas, can't stand them. Then you're actually making some spiritual advancement. So the way our movement spreads is basically by this Ajnata Sukriti. We expose people to Krishna consciousness, give people a little prasadam. And then later on they become devotees because they've been exposed to Krishna consciousness. They've started their spiritual journey just by eating a little prasadam. So this is a very important principle of Ajnata Sukriti. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he deliberately sat down, not only because he was humble, but he deliberately sat down where the sannyasis washed their feet, which is actually quite a dirty place, because people walked around barefoot. You know, people washing their feet after walking over the village barefoot, and people do all sorts of things in the village. So the feet are really dirty. So he sat down in that place to engage Prakasananda Saraswati and he got to Sukriti. So that Prakashananda Saraswati could make advancement, so Prakashananda Saraswati would be able to understand what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was getting ready to tell him. So I think we'll end here, and we will take questions at this particular juncture. So I will unmute, or give you all the opportunity to unmute yourselves. Okay, who has questions?
Here's a summary from TLP Spoken English.
Gosh.
Questions with have and has. Have I many dresses?
That's...
Yes. Have you an extra pen?
That's mine.
Yes. Have they a lot of money? Yes. Has he many friends? Yes. Have I many dresses? Have I troubled you at any time? And more.
Okay. That was my Google Home. Sometimes my Google Home again engages in a Ajnata Sukriti too. Mm-hmm. Unknowing devotional service. So, who has a question besides Google there?
It's a
quick question. Yeah. You're mentioning Gurudev that it was a time, place, circumstance thing when the statement that Suniti couldn't be Dhruva's guru. And I was wondering if even her instruction that he go to the forest would also be considered time, place, circumstance.
Yeah. Yeah, that instruction, you know, if you're going to look for God, go to the forest, would be considered time, place, and circumstance. Because in those days, the sages resided in the forest. So if you wanted to get spiritual instruction or if you want to engage in austerity, you would go to the forest. Yeah, so all the instructions that were given to Dhruva by his mother were actually time, place, and circumstance instructions. Very, very important to understand. And what appears to be a philosophical point, and in what appears to be an incontrovertible, let's say philosophical or practical injunction, you know, which many people use to try to prove that women should not give initiation. There's a reason I mentioned that. Because right now, all right, let's backtrack a little bit. We're having a discussion or mediation or fight or, I can't think of another word, argument or friendly back and forth. Anyway, we're having a friendly back and forth with some devotees on an official level, discussing why or if women can give diksha or initiation. And this is not confidential information, but one of the main arguments, and think about this, one of the main arguments that people give that to try to prove to their point that women can't give diksha, is the statement by Prabhupada in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Suniti, Dhruva Maharaj's mother, couldn't give initiation, couldn't act as Dhruva Maharaj's guru, because she was his mother as well as a woman. And so they say, well, Prabhupada said that, therefore this applies in every circumstance. So in order to understand this particular statement, one has to pull out one's hermeneutical hat. That means to examine things properly, to understand how to reconcile this statement in terms of what Prabhupada said at other times. Like, for example, at other times, Prabhupada said, I want every one of my disciples, boys and girls or something like that, to initiate. You know, if they pass certain tests, Prabhupada at that time was talking about the Bhaktivedanta test. So how to reconcile the two? Then we have to understand whether to take Prabhupada's statement as a timeless instruction, or as a time-bound instruction, or as a description rather than a prescription. Like, for example, Prabhupada sometimes would say to certain sannyasis, a sannyasi's business is to always travel. A sannyasi should not stay in one place. And to other sannyasis, Prabhupada would say, you know, your business is to stay in one place and to develop this project. So here are apparently contradictory instructions. So contradictory instructions have to be reconciled. It's not that Prabhupada was being hypocritical or Prabhupada forgot what he said. Prabhupada was simply adjusting instructions according to time, place, and circumstance. And in the case of Dhruva Maharaj's mother, Suniti, it was a description. And sometimes Prabhupada would use the word in Vedic times, or in the Vedic system, you know, women had a certain position. You know, referring to the Vedic system at a different time. And so we're in a different circumstance right now. So Prabhupada is being very descriptive rather than prescriptive. Prescriptive means you're trying to say what should happen, and descriptive means you're describing a particular circumstance. So it's very important to understand the difference between these two things. And I had some discussions with some people mentioning the difference between prescriptive and descriptive, and these people just said, well, you're bringing all these mundane things, mundane arguments to understand Prabhupada. You should just understand Prabhupada literally every time Prabhupada says something. Well, if you try to understand Prabhupada literally every time he says something, you're going to run into so many contradictory statements, and you're not going to be able to apply what Prabhupada, and ultimately you may lose your faith. So therefore, things have to be explained properly, time, place, circumstance, prescription, description, and then you have to understand in terms of our Siddhanta, or statements of Siddhanta, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Dasamula. For example, we had this discussion, I think several days or weeks ago, where Prabhupada was talking about how the soul merges in the Brahma Jyoti. Okay. So if you just take that particular description or that particular statement out of context, you'll think the soul gets lost. It's finished. Boss. You know, boss. Anyway, maybe you don't know what boss means. Kaput. Okay, that's better English. Kaput. The soul becomes kaput, merges into the Brahman. Like, we've even had that question in class, too, where people have asked the question, the soul merges into the Brahman. But then you have other statements that Prabhupada has made, especially Krishna has made, like what? Majayate mriyate vakadachan, nayam bhutva bhavita va nabuyaha. The soul is not born, nor does die, is not slain when the body is slain. All sorts of statements that Krishna has made. So you have to reconcile these statements utilizing your brain. And the way to do that is to use the principles of hermeneutics to do that. Otherwise, you get very confused. It's apparently contradictory statements. So as far as Dhruva, yeah, so Prabhupada wanted his disciples, lady disciples, to also the ones who could become qualified. And how do you become qualified? Well, ho bhatta swapachito giriyan, yarvijivagrevartate namatubhyam. There's this interesting statement that how wonderful it is if one is chanting the Lord's holy names, one comes to the platform of being a Brahmin. And one's understood to have performed all the preliminary rituals before becoming a Brahmin. So, first of all, we chant the Lord's holy names, we take good association, we follow the principles of bhakti, and then one becomes qualified. Of course, vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jivo vegam, udara pashta vegam, controlling the tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words. One becomes qualified. And there's no Vedic injunction that states that because someone has a certain type of body, you can't become qualified. That's not, there's no injunction that says that because one's a man or a woman or, you know, third or fourth gender. Sorry about that. We have to be modern nowadays. That one cannot become qualified. You know, we have Krishna in a Hayagriva incarnation, a horse-headed person. He was qualified. If someone says, well, you shouldn't accept an animal, but especially you shouldn't accept a half animal, half man, you know, that's even worse than an animal. Or you shouldn't accept Lakshmi. You know, we gave that example many times before because she's a lady. You shouldn't accept children, little children, five-year-old children as a guru, or any five-year-old child as a guru. And then you have the four Kumaras. So anyway, one has to be intelligent in applying these different injunctions. So that's an important point. So who else has a question? Some of the other people have there.
Gurudev, Dayo Pranam.
Yeah, Nalini Kant.
Gurudev, Nalini, I have...
Nalini Kantini.
Dayo Pranam. Gurudev, no, I have three questions. How many... Gurudev, we were talking about a Brahma Jyoti, like when they merge into Brahman, they do not have subtle body anymore. We were learning in Bhakti Shastri once that actually our mind, intelligence and ego, false ego, with bhakti, it changes into, it becomes spiritualized and it goes back to Godhead along with that. So how do I understand?
Yeah, you got a spiritual, you have a spiritual mind, you have a spiritual ego. Yes, spiritual intelligence, yeah.
So when they merge into Brahman, they do not have this subtle body.
No, no subtle body, just the soul.
Just the soul. But then when they come down again, they get that back.
Yeah, when they come down to the material world, again, they get their subtle material body, yeah.
But when one goes to a spiritual world, same mind, intelligence, and...
Your mind and intelligence, before you go to the spiritual world, your mind and intelligence get purified. Shudahabhimana, Kabihama, Evrabo, Shud Vrindavana. So your mind becomes purified. In other words, the covering of your actual spiritual mind becomes uncovered, or you eradicate that covering, and then you have your purified mind. So we actually always have a purified mind and a purified intelligence, but it's covered. Okay. Just like this body, is this body, the gross body, subtle body, are all coverings of the soul.
Yes.
Like Prabhupada would give the example of a glove that covers the hand.
Oh, yes.
So you can't feel things very well if you have a glove on. Just like you're a doctor, I'm sure you use gloves.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And when you use gloves, basically when you're doing your operations, you make a lot of mistakes because you can't feel what you're touching.
Yes, Guru.
But it's practical. You got to have gloves on.
Yes.
So you feel better without a glove. And you go, anyway, so in the same way, we have these coverings of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego that cover the real soul. And when we get rid of these coverings, we can actually perceive reality or experience our spiritual mind and intelligence and real ego.
Yes.
How's that sound? What's the next? You have a third question.
This was first Gurudev. From purports of 51 and 52, Gurudev mentions about Madhyama Adhikari, avoiding non-devotees reaches to innocent.
Right.
So that means Madhyama Adhikari not supposed to teach those who are...
No, Madhyama Adhikari is supposed to preach. Madhyama Adhikari is supposed to preach, but he preaches, or he, she, preaches to those who are innocent. Makes friends with the devotees, preaches. That's Madhyama Adhikari. Madhyama Adhikari preaches to those who are innocent, makes friends with the devotees, worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and avoids those who are envious.
Okay, so non-devotees means those who are envious and atheist.
No. Non-devotee doesn't mean one who is envious. There's plenty of non-devotees who are not envious.
Okay.
Envious means like blasphemer, or someone who is a Mayavadi or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, so those who are innocent, there's a lot of innocent non-devotees.
Yes.
I think most of us were non-devotees. That's a negative definition. Yes. I would rather say most of us had not yet realized our nature as devotees. That's actually much sweeter. Most of us were forgetful of our nature as devotees. But to designate someone as a non-devotee, I think that's really heavy. Although, you know, sometimes we do it, Prabhupada sometimes did it. But I'd rather stay away from the negative designations. You're a non-devotee. Yeah. Negative. Rather than saying, you've forgotten that you are a devotee.
Oh, yes.
That's a lot friendlier. So then when you go out and you meet people and you think, oh, all these people have forgotten they're devotees, then it's not really like, oh, I'm approaching all these moochie rascals here. All these disgusting creeps. it's like saying, instead of saying someone's dirty, it's like saying someone hasn't taken a bath yet.
Yeah.
That's a good way to think about it. So that way, if you have a little child, don't say your child is dirty. Just say, oh, you're in need of a bath.
Yeah.
It's positive language. I think that's good when you're dealing with people. I mean, we have all these terms that are really derogatory, like non-devotees, karmis, malechas, rakshasas. Instead, just say, you know, they are people who have forgotten Krishna.
Yes.
They just need to be reminded. They're my brothers and sisters. Right? Yes. It's better than saying non-devotees. Another thing that people, devotees use is about clothes. Where are we? Sometimes they say, these are karmi clothes. You've heard that expression before.
Yes.
Karmi clothes. That's interesting. What are karmi clothes? We should say, these are Western clothes, or these are Eastern clothes, or this is, whatever. But that, not that they're karmi clothes. How can clothes be karmic? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he went to court, he wore regular Western clothes. So those weren't karmic clothes. Those were his devotional clothes for doing his activities. Anything used in Krishna consciousness is devotional. not karmi. Karmi clothes. So we should try to stay away from negative appellations like karmis or rakshasas or non-devotees. It's just, you know, people just haven't yet realized they're devotees.
Yes.
Okay, who else has a question?
Can I ask one more, sorry.
Another question. Okay, you one more question, you got.
Thank you very much. Gurudev, in this same purport where it says, therefore Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhara understood to be Kanishta Adhikaris, but then in 52, Srila Prabhupada gives in the purport.
Pure devotees.
Pure devotees. So,
yeah, the pure devotees. Sometimes Kanishta Adhikaris can be pure devotees.
Okay.
It's just a question of philosophical understanding.
Yes.
It's not, you know, sometimes you have Kanishta Adhikaris and pure devotees, Majjhima Adhikaris and pure devotees, and well, Uttama Adhikaris are always pure devotees.
Okay.
It depends on the definition, which is really interesting. I mean, you're getting to another, to a subject matter that's quite interesting. I find several different descriptions that Prabhupada gives of the different classifications, Majjhima Adhikari, Kanishta Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. For example, sometimes Prabhupada says that Kanishta Adhikari has no faith and can easily be dissuaded from Krishna consciousness. Now here in this particular purport that we read today, we find that Prabhupada says that Kanishta Adhikari has faith, but no knowledge. Or no knowledge of the scriptures. So it's actually interesting that in different circumstances, Prabhupada gives different definitions of this, of these three classes of devotees, Kanishta, Majjhima, Uttama, Adhikari. Anyway.
Thank you.
But the main thing is that Uttama Adhikari sees everyone. The main thing to understand is Uttama Adhikari sees everyone as serving Krishna, and he respects everyone, and he doesn't preach. And if he wants to preach, it comes down to the platform of Majjhima Adhikari. Majjhima Adhikari makes the distinction between who is a devotee, who is innocent, who is envious, and who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Kanishta Adhikari is generally defined as those who have very weak faith. And another way Kanishta Adhikaris are described as those who see Krishna in the temple, but don't see Krishna in everyone's heart. Because that's an indication of not having strong faith or not having Shastric knowledge. So you'll find really, I was surprised reading the purport today how Prabhupada gave a different description of Kanishta Adhikari and Majjhima Adhikari than he generally gives. I think some of the devotees may have seen that too. But, you know, this, different ways of looking at things. Different ways of looking at things. I mean, sometimes Prabhupada give the, Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada says, a topmost devotee of the Lord, Majjhima Adhikari, is always thinking on how to spread Krishna consciousness. So, I mean, Uttama Adhikari, sorry, is always thinking on how to spread Krishna consciousness. But we know generally that a Majjhima Adhikari is thinking on how to spread Krishna consciousness, not an Uttama Adhikari. So anyway, these are secondary points. So, okay?
Thank you, Gurudev.
Thank you. You took up all the question time today. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Same time, same station. It's good to see everybody, all you nice Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis, demons and rakshasis and rakshas or whatever, and devotees, Majjhima Adhikaris, Kanishta Adhikaris. I think those are derogatory terms, but anyways, you're all good. You're all good. My prophet one time said to the devotees, said, "You're all very good. I'm bad." So I actually, that's the way I feel. Okay, see everybody.